Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf, joined as always by Chris Kottmer. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And Riley Fessler. How are you, Riley?
Pretty good.
And we're here to talk about a few stories in the news and what they may mean. Let's start today with, let me spin the wheel of who do I start with? Oh, lands on Riley. Let's start with Riley.
So Ireland has decided to intervene in South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the ICJ, specifically over the situation in Gaza. It was announced by the foreign minister, Michael Martin, and is an indicator of Ireland's concern over the conflict. Martin highlighted the severe violations of international humanitarian law by Israel, such as the withholding of humanitarian aid and targeting of civilians. So we've covered South Africa's case before, but it now seems like Ireland is going to join in on that.
Well, things are clearly shifting. You know, a Gallup poll came out yesterday, showed the majority of Americans oppose support for Israel. Now it's up to 55%. Bigger majorities of Democrats and independents than that number. That's an enormous change, and it's really kind of a stunning turn when you think about where people were when they heard after October 7th what had happened there. And, you know, even the Israelis recognize they're in a tough position. I was talking to somebody yesterday who was speaking to members of the Minister of Defense's team that came over here to Washington. And, you know, they would openly say in meetings, well, I'm not like Bibi. His own administration is trying to distinguish themselves from him, as Benny Gantz has done in his trip to the U.S. and in other places. So the tension is growing underlying all of this, but the fighting is continuing. The hostages are not close to being released. Netanyahu did say that he was going to send a team to talk about what might happen in Rafah after he, you know, withdrew that option a few days ago in response to what the U.S. did in the U.N. Security Council. But, you know, the number of people in Israel who recognize that they've put themselves in a terrible position is growing dramatically. And I think we're starting to see them shift from their sort of immediate post-October 7th mindset into something that takes the longer term into consideration. Chris?
One of our other favorite leaders, Vladimir Putin, has announced that Aaron Rodgers will be joining the Polish. Ah, Just kidding.
You think I'm not listening? Go on.
He may quarterback the New York Jets next year. Russian President Vladimir Putin declared that Russia has no aggressive intentions toward NATO countries. Go back to our podcast from about a month ago, where his statements did not suggest this, including Poland, the Baltic states, and the Czech Republic, dismissing the idea of an attack as complete nonsense. Again, even though he already said that he wouldn't hesitate. The more dire statement was that he warned that if the West supplies F-16 fighters to Ukraine, that Russian forces would shoot them down, arguing these jets could also carry nuclear weapons and stating that their presence in third countries would make them legitimate targets. This stance is amidst the ongoing deep crisis in Russia, in the Russia-West relations since the invasion of Ukraine in February 22. I don't know what to make of this guy. He flip-flops. I mean, he's a dictator. Like,
Come on. He's just saying what he wants to say, when he wants to say it, and no one says no to him. And, you know, his main message is demonize the West, make him look better relative to the West, and to try to look strong, because I think what his people want is for him to look strong. And, you know, of course, if you're paying attention, as you obviously are, he lies about this stuff all the time. There are no consequences for him lying about this stuff. And of course, F-16s are going to get shot down in Ukraine. When you send the F-16s to the Ukrainian Air Force to go and fight against the Russians, that's inevitable, just as U.S. tanks, German tanks, British tanks, you know, have all, you know, from time to time been destroyed in this. This is a war. For anybody who's interested, though, in the consequences of the war, who has not listened to our podcast from yesterday, where we did a special version of the DSR Mothership podcast, where we had Nate Mook, who was the CEO of World Central Kitchen, and who was so moved by the situation in Ukraine that he stepped down from being the CEO of World Central Kitchen, which he was, you know, Jose Andres's right-hand man in starting, and said, I'm staying in Ukraine and I'm going to work on issues pertaining to the people of Ukraine, even the pets of Ukraine. And it's a really touching story and provides a really important perspective, which is that for the people of Ukraine, there is no alternative to fighting till the end. They are not going to give up land to the Russians. They are deeply disturbed that the U.S. is not stepping up. But they are committed, even as they are exhausted and battered from the not just the 2 years of this type of war, but the 8 years that preceded it. It's a great conversation. He's a remarkable guy, and I strongly encourage you to listen to it. Riley?
Wait, after you listen to the podcast, you can go get your tickets for the new Broadway play that's coming out in April called Patriots, which is about Vladimir Putin.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you from our man on the aisle on Broadway, Chris Cotmore. Riley?
Well, some positive developments in Haiti as the Transitional Presidential Council has finally issued its first official statement. You know, it kind of comes with the usual language of promising to restore public and democratic order amidst the violence and instability caused by the incredible amount of gang violence, especially in the capital. It's still missing one member. It should be 9 members, but it is still at 8. And it is a positive step, but, you know, I'm a little skeptical of why these gangs would recognize the legitimacy of this council as opposed to the previous president and government. You know, this obviously has international backing, but given the sheer level of violence in the country right now, I'm kind of curious why this council would really be a solution. But maybe you have more insight on that, David.
You're not curious. I know why you put these things this way. There's no reason why they will have a solution. They will not be successful. We are not nearly at the point where the political will exists throughout Haitian society to put together a truly representative democracy. This is going to continue to be a situation where the elites have, disproportionate control, and most of the people of Haiti, most millions and millions of them, will be in poverty and suffering and will periodically, you know, blow up as that, you know, anybody would in those circumstances. So this is a Band-Aid. It is not a long-term solution. Chris?
Joseph Lieberman, the senator from Connecticut, has passed away at the age of 82. He was Al Gore's running mate in the 2000 election. He was initially a Democrat and went independent. I heard some takes, you know, from when he left the Senate, essentially saying that his biggest worry was that we were a divided country, and that democracy was under siege, pretty prescient given what's gone on over the past several 2016, I guess 8 years now we're talking about this. So some sad news.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who knew Joe Lieberman. I met him a few times. They thought highly of him. Al Gore wrote a very warm remembrance, of course. They were on the campaign trail together. He was a big advocate for a lot of Jewish organizations. They wrote many warm remembrances. But I think, to be honest, you know, we have to sort of assess people in terms of the whole of their lives. And, you know, in his later years, Joe Lieberman got off into, you know, positions that were sometimes fringy or, you know, more recently, you know, he was supportive of this whole no labels candidacy, you know, this whole third party movement, which, of course, you know, if it gains any kind of traction at all, could have the effect of stealing the election from Joe Biden and handing it to Donald Trump. You know, most of the projections show that 2/3 of the RFK Jr. votes, for example, come from the Biden camp, not from the Trump camp. And in all likelihood, that's exactly what would happen with a no labels candidacy. And so, you know, he's one of these people who, you know, and then there are many whose the last act of their lives tends to color all that they did before. I think we should take it in its totality. Riley?
Well, Sam Bankman-Fried, who is the 32-year-old founder of the now bankrupt FTX, will face his sentencing today for defrauding investors and banks. Prosecutors are seeking a 40 to 50-year sentence for his financial crimes, while his defense is arguing for 5 to 6.5. So clearly a big gulf there. You know, and it kind of boils down to the fact that the defense is arguing that he's a nonviolent first-time offender, whereas in recent years, white-collar crime has been punished more severely, which would lean more to that 40 to 50-year sentence. Those that he's scammed certainly have come out and said that they want them to throw the book at him. But we'll see. I mean, you know, billions in customer deposits were lost in this, so it was certainly a huge case, but we'll see what the judge decides.
But look, if you had, you know, all your life savings disappear because of this guy, you wouldn't think that this was, quote, white collar crime. You would feel as though you had been, you know, your house had been robbed, your life had been robbed, that, you know, you were, you had to work then for the rest of your life and you didn't think you'd have to. These people are rightfully angry. You know, it's kind of striking to think about, you know, 5 years ago, this Sam Bankman-Fried was a kid who was had gajillion dollars and seemed like he was living a charmed life. And he's going to be in jail probably for several decades now. So, you know, it's striking, but it sends an important message to everybody who is currently behind the Trump Truth Social offering on Wall Street, which is, you know, a company that lost $3 million last year, but, you know, valued at billions and billions of dollars. More white-collar crime all the time. In fact, there's a pretty high portion of what goes on Wall Street that's got, you know, questions about it. Everybody's got to be careful out there. What do we got coming up from the Daily Blast today, Ryan?
So Greg sits down with a journalist who has been covering the Baltimore Bridge collapse very closely and talks a little bit more about the six men, some of whom we now know are deceased, and kind of who they were. So it's an interesting episode.
Interesting. And later today, you know, on the podcast that we normally talk about politics on, we're going to talk about one of the most powerful people in American politics, who we don't talk about that much anymore, maybe because he's into his, you know, 90s and we don't think he's really got a lot of traction. And by that may mean Rupert Murdoch, who, by the way, is getting married again, you know, happy, you know, Congratulations, Rupert. But we're going to talk a little bit about that, since the woman he's marrying is a family member of a Russian oligarch. You'll remember Rupert's last wife was pals with Vladimir Putin. And we're like, hey, I don't understand. How come the Republican Party in the United States loves the Russians? Well, we're going to answer that question to some extent, because Rupert has been the puppeteer behind a lot of stuff. And he's always been perfectly fine with the Russian oligarchy. Doesn't care. It's a good one. Join us for that. And every day. And we'll be back again tomorrow, too. So join us again for that. Until then, bye-bye.